And we are looking forward to possibilities and limits of solidarity under conditions of white supremacy. To your talk. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this introduction. It helps me not to be too nervous. It's really, really helpful.
I took it already.
It's like, okay, it's not so like a lead, and now I have to talk, and everybody's looking at me. Nice, thank you.
Thank you for this unconventional introduction, and unconventional but charming. Here you can see this structure of our talk. As you can see, and this is the only slide we will present, you can see that we have three topics, and both of us will talk to all three topics, and so there will be several speaker changes during the talk. And I will make the start, and first of all talk about my relation to the theme of solidarity in the context of my personal story and position. A few months ago, in a presentation at a conference, I referred to decolonial approaches and indigenous theories. During the discussion about my paper, an elderly white colleague said, "It has always been fundamental for me to reflect on the importance of my class background in relation to my identity and my academic work. I never thought about the respective meaning of colonialism, and I don't see why I should start to do so now." So, in other words, she explained that class was an identity issue for her, but colonialism wasn't. When I later remembered this situation, it came to my mind that in the German context, such a statement nowadays was not thinkable in relation to the genocide committed during National Socialism. I have difficulties to imagine a German academic who dares to say in public, "Up to now, I did not reflect on the meaning of the Holocaust for my identity and my work, and I don't see why I should do so now." Instead, it can be regarded as a widespread concept in German society that during National Socialism, one of the most atrocious humanitarian crimes was committed by Germans and in the name of Germany, and this fact is of ongoing importance for our self-conception as society today. My own academic work is deeply influenced by dealing with the Holocaust and its relevance for my family and the German society. Ancestors on the side of both my parents have been involved as persecutors in the context of National Socialism, or at least shared and supported its ideology, and ancestors from the side of my mother have been persecuted and murdered because they have been identified as Jews. Becoming more and more aware of the ongoing importance of the experience of National Socialism for all family members and intergenerational tensions, I developed a critical attitude towards mechanisms like tabooing or an over-identification with the Jewish side of my family, which I perceived as a form of avoidance of dealing with some family members' guilt. Personally, from this guilt, I derived a social responsibility for ensuring that the lie would not happen again. The importance of those topics might have been a crucial background for my decision to take up studies in social work at a rather left-wing faculty in Berlin. Not only discussions on Germany's culture of remembrance in relation to the Holocaust, but also feminist theory, theories on racism, and later on queer theory were very important in my studies and still deeply influenced my academic career. Texts like The Difficulty of Not Being Racist, written by Anita Kalpaka and Nova Rätsel in 1986, were extremely helpful in developing a sensitivity for the ideology of white supremacy and its structural importance also in the German context, as Isabel will describe it more thoroughly. My sense for a special responsibility connected to the Holocaust was supplemented by an increasing awareness of my own privileged position in society related to the fact of being white. My academic involvement with the mentioned critical approaches was also connected with reflections on questions of identity, possibilities of political action, and with the subject of solidarity. Especially Audre Lorde's thoughts on the chances and limits of solidarity between women influenced my conception of solidarity, which I would describe as political rather than Christian notion. Like Kastner and Susan Michel put it in their book Unconditional Solidarity from 2021, I do not perceive identity, politics, and solidarity as contradictory, but instead the dealing with different positions in society, from my point of view, is an indispensable part in building solidary relationships. The colleague's remark on colonialism I mentioned in the beginning, also reminded me of my own long-term ignorance in relation to Germany's part in colonialism. Despite my long-term occupation with racism and a vague knowledge about Germany's responsibility for the Herero and Namaqua genocide at the beginning of the last century, it is only in the last years that I became aware of the high relevance of colonialism for my identity and my academic work. Last September, at a conference on Germany's colonialism in Namibia here at the University of Education in Freiburg, Martha Akawa and Cynthia Iambo, two colleagues from the University of Namibia, impressively described how the genocide accounted by the German Empire caused traumata which are still highly virulent in Namibia's present society. For me, this report all the more scandalized the fact that knowledge about this genocide has been silenced so long in the country of the perpetrators, and the trauma experienced in the Namibian society does not at all resonate with appropriate feelings and or discussions in general.
I was born and raised in Germany. I have a German mother whom I've never met, and a Somali father whom I met at the age of 32. I grew up with my white adoptive parents, my adoptive mother, who is originally from France, and my adoptive father, who is originally from a formerly German-speaking part of Slovakia, and fled to Germany with his parents at the end of World War II. I lived in a small village and experienced a lot of racism. Especially the N-word accompanied me for a long time, and I already understood in kindergarten that I was to be devalued with this word. I also had very bad memories of my school years, which were also deeply marked by devaluation and bad grades. I didn't learn anything about colonialism at school. History consisted primarily of German history with a special focus on World War II and the Holocaust. For me, learning about National Socialism had the particular effect of making me realize that I too would not have belonged to Germany. I later read the biography of a black man who spent his youth in Nazi Germany, a book that made a great impression on me and strengthened my feeling that I would not have belonged here then, nor do I belong here now. What didn't come up with was the feeling of guilt, although the German society somehow expects people like me and migrants, or the dissidents, to feel guilty as well. Guilty of something that actually would have made us victims of the system too. I don't feel guilty, partly because of my family constellation is the way it is, but especially through the realization that I too would have been deeply despised and certainly persecuted by the Nazis. However, I was horrified by so much dehumanization and violence, which evoked deep empathy in me for all the dehumanized, shocked and gassed people. And that had a profound effect on my learning about the Holocaust. I would like to stick with dehumanization because it's central for me. Later, much later, I came to deal very slowly, then more and more with racism, and by now very deeply with colonialism and white supremacy. I politicized myself, and today I would call myself an activist, a scientist, and an activist, which is not mutually exclusive in my idea of science. I spent some time on the African continent, became more and more involved with colonialism and colonial continuities, and gradually understood how old the history of dehumanization of non-Christian, non-white, and especially black life is, and how deeply it shapes and hurts me and us. Black dehumanized life, which is secretly despised to this day, what Charlotte Biedermann describes in her book, Understanding the Pain of the Others, as negligible life. However, in contact with black friends, colleagues, other black parents, I have also understood how strongly we are connected through this collective trauma. The body deeply shapes the relationships with these people and gives me a lot of strength. We pass it on to our children by proudly telling them that they are black and not pretending it doesn't matter. This is perhaps what Louis R. Gordon calls black consciousness. I think it to be remarkable how strong the resistance of the white hegemonial society against the mere existence of this black consciousness is. Maybe a sign of acknowledgement of guilt, which is in fact deeply ignored. More and more, I also became aware of how resilient our ancestors were, and with their strength ensured that we are still here, despite genocides, mass deportation, enslavement, exploitation, the erasure of our names, culture, history, languages, the continued exploitation of our continent. A connection that is felt both in the diaspora and on the continent, and strengthened by decolonial practices. For example, since 2019, the Ghanaian government has been running a recall campaign aimed specifically at descendants of former slaves, exactly 400 years after the first slave ship landed in the US. In this way, Ghana not only wants to provide a safe place for people of African origin, but also to take responsibility for African people in the diaspora. When I hear people asking why they should bother with colonialism, it hits me deeply. A question that, as Bettina has already made clear, would not be asked in the context of National Socialism and the Holocaust. But what the discussion of National Socialism often ignores is the long history of dehumanization of non-white, non-Christian life. A history that includes the genocide of the Nama and Herero, as well as the Holocaust, the genocide in Rwanda, or the still ongoing apartheid system in Namibia and South Africa. In dealing with colonialism, it becomes clear that the foundation of this world order were laid over 500 years ago, based on the idea of white Christian supremacy ensured that non-white Christian people have been cruelly exterminated. And this is a significant difference to the Nazi era. Colonialism and neo-colonialism continues and is omnipresent. Or as Walter Mignolo writes, coloniality is still with us. From a decolonial perspective, there's no outside of coloniality, from where coloniality can be observed. In the spirit of Aimé Césaire, I would like to ask what colonization did to the colonizers and their descendants. What did centuries-old construction of white superiority do to white people? What does it trigger to hear for centuries about being better, more valuable, more civilized, and more developed? I would like to refer again to Gordon, in which white consciousness is particularly shaped by the idea of being superior and imposed on the world. Gordon describes the consequences as narcissistic disorder, which is characterized by placing oneself above the others, and a penchant for monopolizing conversations and belittling people they claim to be inferior. White supremacy is also effective as an international power system that includes an ideology of white racial superiority and its related sets of practices. To this day, white consciousness is characterized by a lack of empathy with non-white life, well observable at the EU borders, global vaccination injustice in times of COVID, and of course, in the commemoration of the victims of colonialism. The impact of indigenous theories on our reflection on solidarity. Indigenous theories had big impact on my reflection about me, society, solidarity, nature, and the entanglement of Africa and Europe. I would like to present you some facets of Ubuntu, a philosophy which is located in the southern parts of Africa. When I think about what fascinates me most about Ubuntu is the idea of the human being who is deeply connected to other human beings and to nature, and who depends on this connection. The image of the human being that is predominant in the West is very different from this. In the letter, the focus is on the human being as an individual who is particularly characterized by his rationality. The idea of Western philosophical tradition to think of the human being as a unique individual who comes to his or her own and individual identity solely through rationality and ego consciousness. The human being who is closest to himself, egoistic, independent, rational, which illustrates the binary and hierarchization inherent in Western thinking. I remember numerous discussions with people around me because I questioned this image of the human being early on. I don't want to see myself that way because it has never fit with my sense of interconnectedness and the idea of a self that is good and wants good for others too. Maybe this feeling was there so early because as an adopted Afro-German child, I felt very different connection early and also experienced how strong they were. For me, they're very necessary for survival. It was only much later when I was more intensively involved with colonialism and in exchange with my African friends and colleagues that I realized that the discussion I had often became so vehement because something essential was being stretched. White Eurocentric knowledge that what was exported to the world as unique and true and declared to be universally valid. Ubuntu assumes from the inherent humanity and inalienable value of all. To be human is not something that is denied or ascribed based on ancestry, phenotype, or history. Instead, it is given. And the quality of a person's personhood is one which is dependent on their commitment to the well-being of the others. The starting point of Ubuntu is to consider and treat human beings as originally a being in relations. In the context of this philosophy, the relationship to other human beings is central, and it assumes that an individual human being can only become and exist through other human beings. In terms of Ubuntu solidarity, it's not a choice, it's self-evident and essential to survive. Ubuntu is based on the assumption that a person is a person because of other persons. Following the colonial logic of devaluing, Ubuntu was also devalued by European philosophers, in which it was said that the idea that a communal ethic and a communal existence was nothing else but an expression of primitivism, which ought to be compared by an ethic of individualism, which has been the main reason behind the rise of Western civilization. Rediscovering these and applying them further is a decolonial approach to Eurocentric bodies of knowledge.
Decolonial approaches and indigenous theories helped me to learn that it is not only an ethic request to deal with Germany's responsibility in relation to colonialism. As also as Isabel summarized, those approaches make clear that colonialism as a worldwide power system is of ongoing relevance for our cohabitants in a crisis-shaken world, and thus for questions of solidarity in view of white supremacy. As Isabel also made clear, referring to Ubuntu philosophy, indigenous philosophies are very inspiring in relation to their potential to shatter long-term confidences transmitted by Western knowledge systems. Also, Kapapa Maori, as for example Tikalehau Hoskins describes it, with its relational ontological practice, opens up the potential for new ways of relating and can interrupt patterns of power. Also, I learned from reading about indigenous theories that any notion of taking into account indigenous perspectives from the side of a white Western perspective has to be very aware of the danger of reproducing a colonialist attitude. Many colleagues in the field of indigenous theories, also Alison Jones, hinted at the danger posed by non-indigenous scholars romanticizing and exploiting indigenous knowledge or to use it in order to overcome their own feelings of guilt. Maori scholar Georgina Tuari Stewart analyzes different attitudes of non-Maori in relation to Maori and identifies a type she calls vampire. She uses the dazzling notion of vampires to describe non-indigenous people who strive to get involved in Maori affairs. Maori topics are their object of desire and they expect Maori to supply them happily with information about their culture and to behave in a typical Maori way. In view of a centuries-long history of colonialism and post-colonialism, which, as Said in 1978 concisely described, has always been accompanied by an exoticization of other cultures, I feel that being a white European, I should be very aware of the danger of cultural appropriation. Maybe, being a white German, I am particularly prone of the danger of romanticizing indigenous culture, as a positive reference to one's own traditions in Germany has been contaminated since the idealization of German culture under National Socialism. At the same time, I think the confrontation with the attitude described by Stuart is also well known to diverse minorities in Europe who sometimes feel exploited by the curiosity of well-meaning members of the dominant culture. Thus, in consequence, solidarity can only be realized if those of us who are privileged in the context of dominant power structures are ready to question their own motives in desiring to build up solidarity relationships. As Isabel pointed out, solidarity in the light of white supremacy should involve reflections on the effects of the construction of white superiority on those of us who are identified as being white. This means, as Claire Land puts it, to reflect our own inescapable complicity with colonialism. Thinking about possibilities and limits of collaboration between indigene and colonizers, Kumi Jenkins and Patterson Jones describe that during their collaboration, they explored completely different perspectives on Aotearoa's New Zealand's history. In their collaboration, they could develop a new, rich account on this history. This was possible under condition that both sides renounced the desire to fully understand the respective other perspective. As Isabel and me described in our first part, also German history can be perceived differently depending on the respective own position in society. In public intellectual debates of the last years, approaches which take into account the Holocaust and post-colonial perspectives have often been confronted and treated as competing. In our last part, we will shortly discuss consequences of those special conditions in Germany's culture of remembrance for our topic of solidarity. In a global situation which can be characterized by persistent inequalities and injustices and an increasing climate problem, and following the perspective of white supremacy, a lack of empathy with non-white life, as Isabel just explained, questions related to solidarity seem all the more important and urgent. Personally, for me, thinking about this topic with Isabel and learning from some theoretical approaches like indigenous theories helped me to become more aware of my own perspective and its rootedness in my family's history. Also, I realized that solidarity as a political project entangles global and local perspectives and is inextricably linked with dealing with differences. In his essay, One World in Relation, from 2009, the Caribbean philosopher Edouard Glisson maps out a concept of solidarity which is based on a recognition of difference. Instead of trying to become universal, Glisson argues particular values should enter in relation to each other. The thinking of a world in relation encloses the totality of differences and distinguishes those differences in order to coordinate. From my point of view, this approach fits very well with Michael Rothberg's reflections in his book Multidirectional Memory, Remembering the Holocaust in the Age of Decolonization from 2009. Rothberg's concept of multidirectional memory turns critically against perspectives which regard different humanitarian crimes as being in concurrence with each other. He pleads for a differentiated form of solidarity which takes into account different stories of victimization without negating differences in experiences, responsibility, and power. In relation to the complex debates we are having in Germany, this approach seems extremely fruitful to me. Such a form of solidarity is based on the will to learn from difference and to understand the other by simultaneously respecting the limits of such an understanding.
How can solidarity between black and white people be possible against the background of absolute dehumanization of black life, or as Achille Mbembe writes, against the background of a European way of thinking which is based throughout its history on the tendency to understand identity not in terms of common belonging to one and the same world. In any case, I would like to take up and strengthen Bettina's remarks on Rothberg's multi-directional memory, dehierarchizing experiences of regret and broadening the culture of remembrance, without losing sight of the specific. Listening without judgment, but with the aim of learning from each other and showing solidarity. I would like to briefly go into the tradition in which I understand solidarity and refer again to the philosophy of Ubuntu. Ubuntu therefore sees people as interconnected, and solidarity is not an option. It is integral to being human. The question now is how to reduce the deep gap that colonialism and racism have drawn between black and white people until today, and from which white people still profit globally. What is needed to regain trust and make solidarity between us as equal people possible? I don't have a universal answer, and I don't think there is one. But an important step is that white people have to learn to unlearn. They have to unlearn the supposed superiority. I don't think that it's easy or even quick. Over 500 years of superiority is deeply embedded in the mind and the body. It appears in attitudes, subtle gestures, looks, comments, or simply deep ignorance. There are certainly many ways to unlearn, but the decisive factor is the willingness to take the first step. As long as this unlearning has not taken place, mistrust remains, at least for me. As long as I cannot be sure that I'm seen as a human being and recognized with all my facets, the solidarity described above is not possible, since it is based on the deep realization that we are all human beings and connected to each other.
Thank you that you found the words to speak about this important topic, and I guess there will be questions, comments, remarks.
Thank you so much to you both. It's been very rich. I am trying to wrap my head around the question of whether there's a difference, or you see a difference, between solidarity and forging alliances, or whether you would see them as synonyms. So, solidarity or alliance? 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 Alliance. I think we all have like our own understandings of what one means and what the other does. I just see solidarity being professed more generally, and alliance as being more explicitly political. But I may be wrong here, and it depends, of course, how one uses a term and what one refers to also with it. So do you have any thoughts on that?
Thank you, Maria, for that question. It's a difficult question, I think. But when I think about the solidarity I talked about within Ubuntu, it's more a natural thing. It's like what you talk about is a political decision. Well, this is my understanding of alliances. That I decide, okay, I really have to be create this alliance because it's necessary. And solidarity in this way, or maybe how I got it in Ubuntu, and how I feel it maybe when I'm on the continent or when I'm with my African friends and they're talking about that, it's more like it's necessary, because without this solidarity you could not survive. And this is what I also experienced, especially in rural areas, but it's very, very, all the groups, they exist because they are solidarity with each other, and it's a natural thing. It's not a question.
Thank you for this question. I find it really difficult to reply to this. I thought quite a lot about the difference between solidarity and friendship, because yesterday morning we were talking, or especially the colleagues from Aotearoa were talking a lot about the concept of friendship, which I found very convincing. For me, solidarity is a bit different from friendship, because I feel that sometimes it is necessary to build up solidarity with people I don't know, and I probably will never meet, because they live at a different part of the globe, and I don't have the possibility to build up friendships with them. But still, I have the feeling that solidarity is necessary. The problem with solidarity is maybe that it is also a Christian concept. This is why I said in the beginning, for me, I understand it as a political concept, which might mean alliance could be the same.
Can I add something?
Yeah?
Just you were going to take.
Yeah, I don't remember. For me, solidarity is kind of, it's not a choice, and it has to cost something. It's not like in the way we use it in the West. It's okay, now I'm solidary because it's hip or it's nice and chic. No, not like this. It has to cost. And this is maybe something, in my understanding, which is important to have.
Thank you, thanks very much. Enjoyed your conversation and your points. Just touching on this idea of solidarity, it's quite a commonly used word, and it's often kind of all that's available to us as white for other causes of others. We talk about our solidarity. But it seems to me that we often fall into the trap of kind of seeing solidarity as one thing. We try to define it. Is it alliance? Is it whatever? And yet it seems to me that there are kind of levels of or fluidities within that particular idea, ranging from, you know, a kind of going on a demonstration to show solidarity or wearing a badge to show solidarity, right through to a kind of physical being, a physical change in your body, a physical sense of yourself, which comes from the friendship or the engagement or the being present, which is another expression, I guess, of solidarity. But there's just so many possibilities and so many levels and so much flow within that particular idea. And these things come and go, and they also shift depending on the context in which those relationships are played out. Yeah, so I just wanted us to kind of think in more fluid and heterogeneous ways about this one term and what the possibilities are within it. And there seems that there's a lot of possibilities within it. Yeah.
Thank you for that.
Thank you very much for this inspiring presentation. To continue with this idea you mentioned with the solidarity concept, and you said that it costs something. Does this mean that solidarity is connected to the concept of reciprocity in the sense of mass and mass, for instance, or is it something else when you what you mean when you say it costs something?
I don't know the concept you're talking about. but I mean it in a way that I don't have to think about it, even if I know that I have disadvantage, just when I'm solidary, for example, with a special group or a person. It has to cost me lots of more. It's not me who decides, it's kind of human act which is necessary for the person, and it has nothing to do with me or my interests. You know what I mean? Even if I know that I will have disadvantages from my decision, I will still be solidarity with. When I think, or of course, when I'm persuaded that it's necessary for the person I'm in contact.
Still on the concept of solidarity, it's difficult to feel in solidarity from a privileged perspective, from a privileged situation. If you're talking about your experiences, I've never suffered from racism. Maybe I've suffered from sexual harassment or something, but that's different. So what is the basis for solidarity? Can I be in solidarity with you from my privileged position? Or how would you, well, what are you asking from me in terms of solidarity? You know what I mean?
I would try to answer, because in a way this was my topic of my part of the tour.
Yeah.
You were addressing it a bit, but in a way I feel this too. Because I was thinking about what does it mean if we find, in relation to racism, we find ourselves in a privileged position in society. What does it mean for solidarity? And what I tried to point out was that I think it is, first of all, it is very important to reflect our own motives and why do we want to be solidarity. Is it really a political motive, or is it somehow self-oriented?
But and that's again our position. I was asking about her. You understand her
Yeah, but why should
I mean, why should people explain it to us?
It's
our task
to
think about it.
Yeah, for us.
I can't talk about you. It's your step. I can't talk about that. I can talk about.
Maybe I couldn't make myself clear. Yeah.
Yes, I really relate to what this interaction. When I was young and starting in this group, I said to a Maori woman, "What can I do?" In other words, what is your demand of me, which is the question.
Yeah.
She said to me, you work that out yourself. It was a very powerful answer. And you can't be expected to answer that, because that is, it's not what you demand of me. It's what I demand of myself in this relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is why I gave the mic to this
Yeah. For support.
Well, that's pretty clear to me, but I have to think about my question again.
Maybe this is a good situation or point to come to an end for now and to think further in the break with the coffee and other constellations. And I thank you so much for your talk and the discussion. So thank you.